Our New Testament reading is from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 14, verses 13 through 21. I invite you again to hear the word of the Lord. Now, when Jesus heard this was the arrest and death of John the Baptist. When Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them and cured their sick. When it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is now late. Send the crowds away so they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves." Jesus said to them, "They need not go away. You give them something to eat." They replied, "We have nothing here but five loaves and two fish." He said, "Bring them here to me." Then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass. Taking the five loaves and the two fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples. And the disciples gave them to the crowds. And all ate and were filled. And they took up what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 baskets full. Those who ate were about 5,000 men, besides women and children. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. There is a difference between being alone and being lonely. Jesus withdrew to a deserted place by himself. He did this a lot. In fact, immediately after the story where Jesus feeds the 5,000, the very next thing it says is, "And after Jesus dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray." Over and over again throughout the Gospels, Jesus seems to find value in being alone. Jacob sends his family away in the middle of the night as he prepares to meet his brother Esau, who he thinks is going to kill him. And it says, Jacob was left alone. The word for alone there is the Hebrew word badah, which means lonely, isolated. Jacob is lonely. He is utterly alone in life. The other week, I went to see a movie by myself. I do that a lot. If I want to see a movie that Jen doesn't really care about, then I just go and see it on my own. And I am perfectly content in doing that. Even if I'm the only person in the theater, it doesn't bother me at all. You can be alone and not be lonely. But I remember this one time when I was in high school. I was home alone one afternoon, watching a movie on TV. So same thing, watching a movie by myself. It was this incredibly sad movie called My Life, where Michael Keaton plays a young father with terminal cancer, and he's making all these videos to teach his child all the things that he's not going to be around to teach him. It's an absolutely gut-wrenching movie. We had just had to put my dog to sleep not long before that. And I'm going through something else difficult in life, so all of this stuff is just sitting with me, and while I'm watching this movie, there is this terrible electrical storm outside, the worst that I have ever experienced in my life. If anyone has ever experienced a Florida electrical storm, you know they can be pretty bad. I mean, this is like pouring rain, strong wind, nonstop lightning, like flashes of lightning every second, and incredibly loud thunder. I remember sitting there while all of this is going on, just crying, because I felt so alone, isolated, lonely. Author Hannah Arendt writes about this distinction between solitude and loneliness, and she says, "Solitude is that human situation in which I keep myself company. Loneliness comes about when I am without company, but desire it and cannot find it." We live in such a highly connected world, perhaps more so than at any other time in history. With cell phones, the internet, social media, email, we are constantly connected to anyone at any time. And yet so many people say that they feel disconnected, isolated, lonely, and depressed. We are surrounded by people, and yet we seem to be desiring something that we cannot find. Historian Jennifer Stitt writes that in our hyper-connected world, a world in which we can communicate constantly and instantly over the internet, we rarely remember to carve out spaces for solitary contemplation. We check our email hundreds of times per day. We shoot off thousands of text messages per month. We obsessively thumb through Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, aching to connect at all hours with close and casual acquaintances alike. We search for friends of friends, ex-lovers, people we barely know, people we have no business knowing. We crave constant companionship. But, she says, if we lose our capacity for solitude, our ability to be alone with ourselves, then we lose our very ability to think. We risk getting caught up in the crowd. We risk being swept away by what everybody else does and believes in. No longer able, in the cage of thoughtless conformity, to distinguish right from wrong, beautiful from ugly. And then she says what's quoted on the cover of the bulletin. Solitude is not only a state of mind essential to the development of an individual's consciousness and conscience, but also a practice that prepares one for participation in social and political life. Before we can keep company with others, we must learn to keep company with ourselves. Now, this could easily be a sermon where I tell you that you need to nurture your capacity for solitude, to spend time alone so that you can center yourself in God apart from the crowds. I'm an introvert, so that makes sense to me. Spending time alone is really nourishing and renewing to me, and it would be easy for me to tell you that you need to do the same. But I remember years ago, I preached a sermon like that. And after worship, this woman came up to me, an older woman in the church, and she said, I live alone. My husband's gone. My family all lives out of town. And all my friends are dying. My problem isn't that I don't spend enough time alone. My problem is that I spend too much time alone, and I don't know what to do. That was eye-opening for me. See, I tend to view being alone like Jesus in this story. It can be renewing. But for some people, being alone is like Jacob's story. It's a struggle. And the thing is, there is a blessing in both of those. Jesus was alone, and he used that solitude to center himself and draw near to God. For Jesus, the blessing in being alone was that it renewed him and restored him so that then he could go and be with the crowds. Jacob was alone, isolated, lonely, alienated. But it was in his loneliness that God came to him and blessed him and transformed him, gave him a new name, a new identity, a new life. What we see in these stories is that God comes to us in both our solitude and our loneliness. God meets us wherever we are in that, bringing a blessing that can transform us and lead us into deeper relationships with others. The blessing in being alone is that God comes to us and reminds us that we are not alone, that God is with us, and that we are meant to be with each other. God came to Jacob in his loneliness and blessed him so that Jacob could go on to be reunited with his brother Esau and live in harmony with him. God came to Jesus in his solitude and blessed him so that he could go and heal the crowds and transform their lives. And then it's getting late. The disciples recognize that Jesus probably needs some more time alone after all that healing. So they want to send the crowds away. You know, it's time to go get something to eat. Let them fend for themselves. But Jesus says, do not send them away. You give them something to eat. Jesus calls them and us to be with those who are lonely, sick, hurting, to bless them by living life with them. It reminds me of 3 years ago when I was sitting in my office working one day in solitude, and the phone rang. It was a woman named Jean Andrews who said, I'm 99 years old, I live by myself, I don't have any family in the area, and I am very, very alone. I was wondering if someone could come visit me and hold my hand. So I went and sat with her and held her hand and talked with her. And she told me that sometimes she would go days without seeing or talking to another human being. So a few days later, I went back and brought someone else with me. And then that person went back later and brought someone else with them. And then that person went back and brought someone else. And pretty soon, Jean had this whole team of people around her who would call her or visit her every day. We would bring her food. I mean, it transformed her life. God came to her in her loneliness and blessed her, surrounded her with a family for those last 2 years of her life, so that she was not alone. And knowing her, sharing life with her, was a blessing for us. You want to know the amazing thing? It's happening again. This past week, we got a phone call from a woman who lives by herself. She's starting to have some health challenges, and she is very lonely. She talked to me almost nonstop for an hour the other day. I could hardly get a word in edgewise. She was just so hungry for companionship. And then on Friday, she had to go into the hospital. And we were able to be there with her. We're in the process right now of surrounding her with a team of people so that whatever the future holds for her, she doesn't have to be alone. Because it is absolutely unacceptable that in this highly connected world, anyone should have to feel alone. Just as Jesus had compassion for the crowds, we are called to have compassion for those who are hurting and sick and alone. Not to send them away to fend for themselves, but to share life with them and give them something to eat, something that nourishes their body and their spirit. Whether you value solitude or whether you are lonely, the blessing is the same for all of us. God comes to us in our aloneness and reminds us that we're not alone. We're not meant to be alone. And calls us into deeper relationships with each other. You cannot be a Christian by yourself. And you don't have to. We are called to live life together, to bless one another as we have been blessed, to feed one another as we have been fed, so that we can all be transformed by the presence of God.